You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
It's gonna be a football game tonight, now, no doubt. It's gonna be a football game. Yeah, okay.
I'm being here.
All right, let's go, baby.
Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
And the Ohio State Buckeyes are the first national champions of the playoff era.
Ladies and gentlemen, football to football.
Your host, Sean Garmer, Gary Vaughn, and Randy Isbell.
Hello and welcome to another Football to Football, and this is, of course, the Super Bowl post-game edition of our fine show here. Pretty much, I mean, there's a couple of things we kind of have to talk about, but we're doing that way at the end. Somebody decided that, you know, they're more important than the Super Bowl and had to tell everybody they're retiring. Marshawn Lynch. Other than that, we are pretty much going to break down the Super Bowl here today. If you're kind of all Super Bowled out by the time you're listening to this, then I'm sorry. I know you guys watched it as well. We'll get into that. But, Randy, how was your fiesta that you went to?
It was annoying. Again, as somebody that lives in the Pacific Northwest, seeing a bunch of Seahawks fans donning orange because they've decided to jump on the Denver bandwagon for a week because they want revenge on Cam Newton. And my stupidity last week of saying that the Panthers were going to blow out Denver, it was a long party.
Oh, was everybody kind of making you feel bad about it or something?
A little bit. They were reminding me that I had picked Carolina to win this game. So, like Cam Newton himself, I had to eat a little bit of crow and some humble pie.
Gary, we originally had picked the Broncos, and we were not bold enough to go with them in the end for our final prediction. Kind of feel bad now.
Well, you know, in my original, you know, prediction, Arizona versus Denver, I believe, was what I had.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the situation going down without Arizona in that game, I don't feel so bad. Because, you know, there is a reason I picked Arizona to beat Carolina, and that was terrible. So, yes, Carolina came into this game, and I felt really strongly about them, and I also chose them this past week to win this game. And, of course, I even bet my health on it. And, of course, now you can tell I lost the bet. My health is now down. So, thanks a lot.
Nice. Well, I mean, I guess we shouldn't delay much in getting into it here. I mean, this was a game in which it kind of went how we thought it would go as far as the defenses ruling everything, and they certainly did. In the first quarter, I think it was I'm going through notes here. I mean, you had Manny getting out to a fast start. And then they kind of do what they always do, which is they can't convert when you get in the red zone, so they get a field goal. And then the Carolina had a three and out. You had Denver kind of getting nothing on the three and out themselves. And then you had your first big controversial thing happen here, where there was a big 24-yard pass. Where Jericho Cotchery looked like he caught it. He even put one arm under the ball. They challenged it. They ruled it as call on the field stands. So that usually means that there wasn't enough to overturn the original call, which was incomplete. Do you feel like Carolina was hard done by? Because it looked like every angle that they were showing, he had the ball, he had the hand of the ball, and there was nothing that was saying it was incomplete either.
Yeah, that was a tough call. I thought it was a catch watching it. But I definitely can understand why they didn't overturn the call. When you go back and watch the replay, which they showed several times, yes, he has a hand underneath it, but the ball does hit the ground and move, like the tip of the ball, which I still think should be considered a catch because he has control of it underneath. But because the ball does make slight contact with the ground enough where it kind of scoots up his body, I think is where they looked at the replay and went, you know, just because of that fact, we can't quite overturn it. So it's one of those, I think if it was called a catch on the field, it would have stayed a catch too. So just a bad break for Carolina.
You know, it's funny, you know, this is Super Bowl week, of course, this past week. And, you know, you listen to a lot of these NFL players from the past come around, and Jerry Rice is one of them. And one of the interviews I heard him kind of talking about this, and they asked him, what is a catch, Jerry Rice? I mean, you're the guy who knows if anybody knows what a catch is. And he goes, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't, because what I call a catch, they're saying it's not. So I should be the expert, but apparently I'm not. So, and this is the exact case here. I think, you know, the bobble at first when he caught it, and it wasn't a clear-cut catch right away until he gained control of it. I think that had a factor in this, and I think what Randy was talking about with the tip of the ball just moving a bit, in my personal opinion, that was a catch. It was a catch, just like the Dez Bryant was a catch, just like Calvin Johnson. There's so many players from – guys in this history of the game now that you're going to say is not a catch, and you know, honestly, I feel like it was. So I think the Carolina kind of got messed over a little there personally, but by the NFL standards, no, they didn't get screwed over.
I mean, yeah, by NFL standards, they were consistent in being inconsistent. But, you know, at least, you know, because you would, a lot of people would, I mean, Denver would have made a big stink if that would have been ruled you know, not a catch, or a catch after they ruled it not a catch, you know. So it's kind of one of those weird ones where, do we have enough? If we overturn it, this could change the game. It's also early enough where you can make the case where maybe it doesn't, you know. Denver was sort of leading at that point. But the big thing that happens is right after this, a couple of plays later, Von Miller makes his first big-time appearance, and coming around the corner, something you would see him do a lot in this game, something that we talked about. I think I made a big deal about it, that the Carolina offensive line had never seen two guys on the edge like DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller, and they did not know how to deal with Von Miller. He was an absolute force in this game. 2.5 sacks. Both of the fumbles that happened in this game, including this one, which goes into the end zone for a touchdown from Malik Jackson, putting the team up 10-0 in the first quarter, and you're sitting there going, wow, it looks like everything that we talked about that had to go the Broncos' way is starting to go the Broncos' way at this point. And it's just, it's amazing, wasn't it? You're just sitting there going, wow, this defense, they're really putting it to them.
Yeah, you said it exactly right. We talked about how Denver had to start off quick, that the defense could not let the Carolina offense get in any kind of a role, and they did that all basically in that one play. Von Miller got to Cam Newton so fast that I don't even think Cam Newton thought anyone was even going to be close to him at that point. I mean, what was it, 2 seconds it seemed like, from the snap to getting drilled in the middle of his chest. So, I mean, there's just no time to react. There's a lot of times in this game where you could definitely tell that the pressure that got to Cam Newton was created by the great secondary that they also had in this game. But this wasn't that case. Nobody even had a chance to get open. Von Miller completely destroyed the right tackle and came in and made a major play, knocking the ball out. And there you go, Denver's up 10-0.
You know, I was watching this, and I was wondering, you know, after that score by the Denver defense, I was thinking to myself, is this a situation where we've got young guys in this game, Cam Newton being one of them, who are very talented but have nerves, and also are facing a defense that really, honestly, they haven't seen all year. They face some good defenses, but not at the level of what Denver was bringing to the table. You know, even the Seahawks weren't able to pressure Cam like this team did tonight. And the one thing I was also thinking about was, you know, when we're watching college bowl games, sometimes you get these smaller schools who earn a right to face a, you know, an SEC-type team who, you know, faces great talent all year. They come into that game thinking they got it, but they realize, whoa, this is a different level. I kind of think that that's kind of what happened here. Denver was ready for him, and I think that, you know, it ended up in a situation where I really had to get Cam Newton into a mindset of, I've got to calm down. I've got to make sure I don't get too over-frustrated, which I don't think he did. I just think that's what happened here a little bit, and, you know, we're going to talk about more later on about how he did, but I just think it's interesting, you know, that this kind of a score jumped out, and I really don't think Cam Newton ever figured he'd be in that situation, especially, like Randy said, I mean, they got to him so quickly, which all year, Cam Newton's seen all of it, and Cam Newton's been able to elude people. It happened so fast, he couldn't even think about eluding.
Yeah, I like your point on, you know, Cam Newton and just how tight they seem to be. You could definitely tell in, like, those first three Carolina drives that Cam Newton was tight. He had countless throws that were 3-4 yards above his receiver. So you could definitely tell he was pressing a little bit, and that fumble definitely did not help.
No, and the thing is, too, you know, the commentary, and they had a graphic pointing out that this was the first time after that 3-0 lead and then making it a 10-0 lead, that the Carolina Panthers had been down at all during the entirety of the playoffs. I mean, think about that. The entirety of the playoffs, the Carolina Panthers have not been down at all. So that is a much different proposition than being up, and most of the time being up by a lot of points. You know, look at that division game. Look at the way that they dominated Arizona as well. You know, so we're looking at a tight game with a defense that they never faced before, and they didn't know what to do with a lot of these guys. So, you know, we move along here, and then it was right back. Carolina, you know, took that 10-0 lead happens. And thanks to a Key Talib being an idiot about two or three different times on this one drive, having a taunting penalty after they had already got them off the field with a sack. He gets a taunting penalty for getting in the guy's face and repeatedly getting in his face, then taking off his helmet and getting in his face. Which is just, at this point, it's just like, what are you doing? Then, you know, Jonathan Stewart had also gone out at this point. He came back during this drive. He goes, and then Aqib Talib does something else that I can't remember. I think he has the face mask penalty that puts him at the one. And then it's like, okay. And then, of course, they score.
You combined two different drives on that one. He had the one taunting penalty, and then they stopped him, and then it was the next drive that...
He had the taunting. Okay, never mind. I'm looking at this wrong. Yeah, the taunting penalty wound up not costing them because they wound up sacking him anyway, and he punts. Then they get the after the end of the first quarter, that's when he gets the face mask penalty, and Stewart gets in the touchdown, which is the only touchdown that Carolina scores the entire game, and it's 10-7 right here, so the game is much closer. And then on the next drive is, you know, another three and out because they get to a 3rd and 17 because Manning got sacked on the first play or whatever it was on that drive. And then after this is when Carolina does an oopsie on special teams. And they don't realize that Jordan Norwood has not called fair catch, and they just let him run right by him, and he runs for 61 yards and gets taken down, I think, about the, like, 14 or something. I mean, this isn't the first time or the last time the special teams will hurt Carolina in this game. I mean, you'd think he'd pay more attention than that, right? I mean,
yeah, you had brought up how Talib's face mask was a big thing, and I understand, like, it looks vicious and looks terrible, but at that point, I see it as Talib going, well, I'm not going to be able to tackle him any other way. I'm just going to make sure he gets down. because it cost them a yard. And I kind of wish Carolina would have done this on the punt. When they showed the replay, you could tell that one of the Carolina players bumps into Norwood right before he catches it and goes, oops, excuse me, I didn't mean to bump him. No penalty, please. And then you just kind of see everyone else kind of pull off going, okay, that was it. I kind of just would have wished that they would have went, oh, I bumped him. Let's just take him out anyways now. I mean, we're going to get the penalty. Make sure he doesn't get any yards. You'll take your 5-10 yards or whatever and move on. But instead, he kind of pulls off going, no, please don't call me. And it just looks to everyone else coming down the field like, oh, it's a fair catch. We're done. So it's just one of those weird things. Again, the pressure of the situation where you see one of your teammates pull off from the returner. So you pull off thinking that's what's going on. And off Norwood to set a Super Bowl record.
Yeah, the longest punt return ever in a Super Bowl, because there's never been a punt return for a touchdown, which I couldn't believe when they were talking about that. I was like, wow, in the entirety of all these Super Bowls, there's never been a punt return for a touchdown. Could you believe that either, Gary? Just thinking about that?
No, because there's been so many great returners in this game and that have played in Super Bowls. And so that was one of the big surprises to me as well. And you know, I thought for a second there we could have the first one ever, but it didn't end up happening. But still, a record was, you know, set here in this game, and that's great, you know, for him especially. You know, that's a special thing to have walking away from the game. But, you know, I think this was interesting, and Brandy brings up some great points about this. And, you know, it was really just a flaw for Carolina on their special teams. It wouldn't be the first one of the night. But, you know, looking at it, I mean, I don't really blame those players for the fact that they may have thought they saw something. They trust their teammates. You know, when you're in those situations, you know, when you're on the field and you're looking at things, you're trusting the rest of your players as a perspective. When you're looking at the guys in front of you and they're not making the tackle, then you're assuming, okay, then there's the end of the play. Something had to happen here. And so they kind of slowed up, which kind of ended up hurting them a lot. And so I think it was just a trust thing where they trusted someone and they kind of, oops, big mistake here. So I don't really blame the players. They just messed up a little bit here. A big mistake, though, because let's be honest. Yeah,
you're right. It was, but Carolina got a little bit of a break because they get it all the way down to 4th-and-1. Denver does the aggressive thing and goes for it. They get the 4th-and-1, but a holding call calls them back, and they have to kick a field goal, so it's only 13-7 at this point. And, you know, the Panthers get a little bit of a break with an unnecessary roughness call, and it gives them up, you know, moves them up 15 yards, and then Mike Tolbert fumbles, and Denver recovers. Even though it doesn't really, you know, cost the Panthers anything, because Manning would wind up throwing an interception there. But this is where we kind of started to see that Denver offense that we're expecting to see, because Carolina's defense is also great. And, you know, Manning was never really, you know, other than the first part of the third quarter and the first part of the first quarter, he never really moved the ball at all. If it wasn't for C.J. Anderson plowing through guys, they would have never moved the ball.
Yeah, and I want to rewind to a little bit, because you talked about that 4th-and-1. You know, that was, to me, Carolina's defense. I mean, they had their game up. They were ready in that part of the, you know, the game. And, I mean, I really was impressed by them, and they really brought a lot to the table. You know, C.J. Anderson and even Ronnie Hillman, I mean, they in the past have made those first downs. And so those guys really filled the gaps.
Well, he made
really
the first down, but it was because of a holding call.
Well, exactly. Know? But, so, you know, they really take care of business on most parts. And, you know, the holding call was for a reason. There was a reason behind that. It wasn't just because, oh, you know, I think part of the reason he got the first down was because of the hold.
Right.
And so, I mean, to me, that brings up a lot of credit to that Carolina defense, the interception that they got. I mean, so in this part of the game, if you'll notice, I mean, as much as they're, you know, suffering on the scoreboard, they're still playing like it's 0-0. And so I give a lot of credit to them.
Well, and Ely did a great job of, like, he kind of fumbled he bobbled it a little bit, but he was able to kind of secure it and keep going. He went for, like, about 20 yards on the return even. But I think the bigger thing is this was very uncharacteristic of Carolina, where, you know, the number one thing we said that Denver needed to do, aside from getting to Cam Newton, was they had to make sure that they tackled. And they did. Carolina really, other than I think like one Ted Ginn play across the middle or whatever, they got the guys when they had to get them. Whereas Carolina, C.J. Anderson was just busting through tackles at certain points, getting them like 20-yard bursts. I mean, it's only in certain plays of the game, but it's just kind of like that extended drives. Now, I mean, for the most part, they had what, like I think 6 or 7 three and outs in that game, Denver did. But, I mean, talk about you need to make plays defensively. It's very uncharacteristic of Carolina to be not tackling.
Yeah, right? I agree. I'm right there with you on that. And, you know, it's just kind of amazing to me. I think, and I'm really kind of curious what Brandy has to say about this, but I think in part it has a lot to do with the success Peyton Manning had at the beginning of that game where he was able to get the ball out quickly. You know, he had his receivers catching every pass that he was throwing to him for the most part. And I think that made Carolina start to think, okay, well, they're not beating us with a run, but they are for sure beating us with a pass. And so we've got to make sure we take care of that and stop these quick passes. And that gave C.J. Anderson a little bit of room here. At times now, they still were pretty efficient, but there were those breakout
points. They were really efficient on Hillman. Hillman could do nothing in this game. Yeah. It was kind of weird to see, like, it was just Anderson that was doing anything. Hillman just couldn't move. And just the difference between the two running backs, how much one is more valuable than the other, it seemed, in this game when it meant the most. But, like, Randy, I mean, I think we talked a lot about like Denver's offensive line. How were they going to hold up for Peyton Manning? And I think other than Ely, who was a problem, and he caused the fumble, he caused the interception because he dropped back and Manning kind of thought he could get it over him, and they only sacked Manning twice. For a lot of the game, the offensive line was kind of able to overpower that Carolina defensive line.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that, I mean, give credit to Denver's offensive line. You know, they did their job, but a lot of that actually worked the way I thought it was going to when we did the preview, where I really thought Carolina would bring pressure from time to time, but they were more going to sit back. Sometimes, yes, it does shoot them in the foot, and C.J. Anderson's able to get that burst of speed going and overpowered a few Carolina defenders to break tackles and get some extra yardage. But really, they kind of sat back and let things happen. They bent a little bit, but never really let anything big happen. And you saw that through the entire game. I mean, listen, if you just looked at both defenses, you took out all of the turnovers and you just looked at both defenses, Carolina played step for step with Denver, I think, this entire game on defense. It was just Denver got the bigger plays. You go through, yes, Denver scored 24 points, but you give credit to the offense for 6 of those points. I think you give the credit for the first drive of the first half and the first drive of the second half to the offense of Denver. Everything else came from the defense or special teams that set them up for points. So, yes, C.J. Anderson got a few more yards than I thought any of us really thought he was going to. But the Carolina defense deserves just as much credit as Denver's really in this game.
I don't think they deserve that much credit because it is about the plays that you make and how the team can benefit from it. Notice how – let's not forget here. Denver's offense was just as putrid as Carolina's was. It was the more big so. Plays are what matter. And Cam, who's supposed to be this great quarterback, couldn't make the plays when it came down to it. And you to give Denver's defense credit for that.
I just want to stop you there as far as he couldn't make the plays. I mean, yes, he has 2 fumbles. I mean, but if you go back through, I don't think you blame any quarterback for either fumble that he had. I mean,
no, you can't, because you can't blame Manning for his fumble either. He's just throwing it, and the guy comes behind him. I'm not blaming him for the fumbles.
Yeah, and you can't blame him for the interception, because he hits his receiver in his hands. I mean, it was just great defense by Denver, creating a lot of havoc in the secondary, where he wasn't able to find very many people.
But well, he was getting Brown. Pressured like crazy.
Yeah, he loses Brown early in the game, which was...
No, it wasn't early. He lost him in the second half. Well, Corey Brown still made those two big, like, 40-yard receptions later, I think even in the third quarter. He lost them in the middle of the third quarter, I think it was.
But still, I mean, are you going to say that Peyton Manning outplayed Cam Newton?
No, I'm not saying that. neither quarterback played well at all.
That's what I'm saying. It's like the Carolina's defense played just as well. They just more turnovers happened for Carolina than
That's what I'm saying, though. When you look back at this, you're going to say the better defense was Denver's defense because they made the plays that won their team the game, whereas Carolina's team made plays, but the offense couldn't even – look, Graham Gano missed a freaking field goal. I mean, like, you know, it's just that kind of stuff makes a difference at the end. And I mean, I know you didn't make it much of it because they were getting the ball back and at the end of the – you know, to start the second half. But to me, if you're Ron Rivera and you have 33 seconds after Cam Newton runs this play, what are you doing watching him do nothing? And you know that if you call a timeout there, you have enough time to – you only got to get 10 yards to get into Graham Gano's field goal range according to the little red bar there. And it just seemed like nobody was sitting there – whether it was Cam, whether it was your coach, whether it's the offensive coordinator, nobody's sitting there going, hello, time is going off the clock here. 3 points makes a big difference to when you start the second half. I don't know, Gary. What did you think about that? The way that they kind of didn't manage the clock well to end that first half there.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand where you're coming from on that. They didn't do so well, but at the same point, I think that they were just trying their best to do what they thought that was, you know, going to get them in a position to continue, and they didn't. So that's the way it ended up. You know, you can't game plan a perfect game, and, you know, as much as they tried, it just, you know, didn't end up that way. I do want to bring up something before we go to this next half, and that is that, you know, what we saw in that second quarter. You know, basically, you know, the Broncos get in a cheap shot on Cam Newton. They got a personal foul on it. But that's when, you know, he was taken down and one of the, you know, defensive players came and basically hit him towards the head. And I wondered if any of that had to do with some of the, you know, decision making in that second half because of the fact that we saw Cam Newton miss a few receivers. We also see that he really slows down on the running. You know, because in the first, you know, half, we saw him kind of get out, bootleg out, get out there and run, get some first downs, make things happen for that Carolina offense. And then after that, he kind of just, no, thank you. And he was also dealing with his shoulder in the second half a little bit there. So I think Cam Newton got a little banged up here. And I think that's something we really should evaluate. And when we're talking about the finality of this game, because it seemed like after that half, I didn't see much, you know, from what I saw in that first half out of Cam.
Yeah, he got hit really bad on the that 42-yard big catch from Corey Brown where the Broncos kind of over-pursued and Brown was just kind of there to catch it. Mm-hmm. He got hit right as he threw it, too, which was the more, like, just pretty awesome part of it that the ball still went that distance all the way to Corey Brown and he was being hit as he was throwing. And what did you think of all that, Randy? About what Gary was saying with the hits.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see it, and that's just part of what Denver tried to do. I mean, I think the broadcast even brought it up that Cam Newton was looking exhausted, and they didn't know how he was going to be able to do all 60 minutes because it was basically Cam Newton versus that Denver defense. He was out there by himself. The running game for Carolina was surprisingly completely non-existent, and again, full credit to the Denver defense and Wade Phillips and the strategy that they had going into this game. They completely took Jonathan Stewart and Tolbert and Whitaker out of this game. Yes, Stewart got injured a few times, and that's why he was mostly taken out. But Tolbert was completely ineffective, and the one time he was effective, he went out and fumbled the ball. So it was really just all about Cam Newton. He drops back and throws it 41 times, sacked 6 times, as was mentioned, and hit many more times than that. So that's going to take a toll, and it's going to wear you out. And on top of, you just feel like you're still in this game. You feel like you're in an even footing because your defense is keeping you in this game. But it's like you can't get that one play. and you could just start seeing the frustration on Cam Newton's face and everyone else's face. I mean, they get down there and Graham Gano misses the field goal, which would have brought it really close. And it's just, or just another fumble by Tolbert, or just goofy things that would happen where it was like, I really felt like for most of this game, Carolina really was the better team. It was just Denver, who was very equally matched, were making the bigger plays. And sometimes when it comes down to one game, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter who the better team was for 60 minutes. It was who made the bigger
They were the plays. Better offense for 60 minutes. Again, I'm going to argue with you on this point. You can't say they're the better team when the defense is making the plays that – I don't know. I just the better team saying, wins in the end. The better team always
not
wins
always.
In the end.
No, I'm saying Denver has less than 200 yards of total offense. They go 1 of 14 to third down. The defense for Carolina did exactly what they needed to.
Right.
They gave up 6 points.
What did Cam do? And what did the offense do?
They couldn't get things going. It was just the turnovers bite you. That's what we said was possibly the thing. If I take the Carolina Panthers or the Denver Broncos and I have them play the Jacksonville Jaguars and I say the Denver Broncos have 6 turnovers and Jacksonville has 1, who do you think won that game? Jacksonville's probably going to win that game, but do you say Jacksonville's the better team?
No, I mean, no. They like, you know, Chris is saying in the chat here, you know, Denver had 186 yards of total offense, which is the lowest of any Super Bowl winner in history.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not taking no credit from Denver. They deserve to win the Super Bowl. They made the most plays, and it wasn't like they were completely terrible. That defense was amazing.
Well, the offense was completely terrible.
Yeah.
You know.
But, I mean, this game, if you're a casual – I saw from so many casual viewers, like, at the party I was at or on Facebook go, this is the worst Super Bowl ever. I'm like – I loved it. I love defensive matchups. I love the Minnesota-Seattle game we watched a few weeks ago. So I don't want to sit here and like completely say that I felt like Carolina should have just dominated this game the way it was on the field. I thought they would. But watching it, Denver and Carolina were head-to-head. Everything was super close. Denver made the plays that Carolina couldn't. So I'm giving them the credit, but I want to give – to show love to that Carolina defense because they did everything they could.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm going to weigh in here, and I'm not going to agree with either of you. But I am going to say this. I'm going to take some points from what you guys said and kind of put it in my own perspective. Cam Newton didn't have his best game. Peyton Manning didn't have his best game. That's a draw. So both offenses, let's say it's a draw. No one's better, just a draw. Defenses, both defenses played outstanding. Yes, Denver had a lot more turnovers. But, you know, that's fate sometimes. Carolina did a lot of good things in this game. Let's call that a draw. Denver's special teams, great job. Carolina, not so good. So I have to give the nod to Denver because of that. You got to play all three phases. If you get a draw, and then one win, I got to give it to Denver.
You completely nailed it right there. Listen, Graham Gano misses the field goal. McManus drills all three he needs. Both punters I thought were really good. But listen, when you have Colquitt back there who has 8 punts, he averages almost 46 yards a punt, and he's punting to Ted Ginn, and he is placing him at the sideline every single time where Ted Ginn gets a total of 2 yards punt return yardage.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Gary. The special teams was huge in this game for Denver.
Yeah, then if you throw in the error by the Carolina's not on that punt return too, which, you know, that kind of throws it in their thing. And, you know, then just the decision, the missed field goal, then he makes one. I mean, and that's the thing, too. This game was never out of hand until that last drive where the offense finally scores an actual offensive touchdown. It was like 16-10 for a while there, you know. And that's the thing. Like, it was – you know, they wind up losing Corey Brown to that concussion, which was huge. Let's not forget about that. That was huge for that offense because Corey Brown was the only one that was really making plays downfield. You know, when he was getting it to Corey Brown, he was making the catches. Everybody else, it was either, and Ted Ginn had that one across the middle, but other than that, Ginn was getting covered. Olsen was covered really, really well, you know. And then, you know, if you throw in the pressure from Cam where he's constantly having to run around. And I think the key to me, too, on that defense is Denver was most effective on third downs getting to Cam, sacking him, yeah. Which is huge when you're thinking about, like, third and eight, third and four, third and seven, like – those downs where you really need that third down where Denver would just run the ball and give up. You know, Cam's sitting there trying to make a play, and Denver's defense, DeMarcus Ware or Von Miller, good God, they didn't know what the hell to do with those guys.
Yeah, and that brings you right back to the point that you made earlier, Sean, about how everyone was curious how the Carolina offensive line was going to be able to handle somebody like Ware and Miller combined. And it really showed on those third downs, because what they were able to do was really stack the middle of the line to go, we're not going to create any holes for Cam Newton to run through. And then we're going to bring Miller and Ware around the outsides to bring the pressure. So now he doesn't have a lot of time, and now he has nowhere to go. And we put all the trust in our secondary to stop these receivers. And it was the perfect strategy by Denver.
Do you feel like there is one part where they could have called, I think they could have called a pass interference for Carolina on Cotchery, but they don't call it? It's like a third and 15 or something like that. And I think that was also kind of big, because imagine if they score there. You know, that's the thing too, because there was parts of this game where, you know, Denver decides to just run it on third down, period, and just give it back to the defense because of the way they've been dominating, which is smart if you're looking at the way they've been playing. But it was only 6 points. Carolina scores a touchdown. Carolina wins until that last part where you get the four, you know, where Ward picks up the fumble at the 7 yard line or whatever. I mean, do you think it was obviously in hindsight, because of the way the offense was bad and the way the defense was doing well, do you think that it was always a good idea to say, I don't have any trust at all in Peyton Manning to get a first down? We're just going to run it every time on third down.
Now, are you talking about the pass interference? Is that what you want me to comment on?
Well, the pass interference and that like whole idea by Kubiak to just say,
running the ball.
Screw this. We're not even trying to give Carolina a shot here. We're just going to run it and punt it.
Yeah, and I want to comment on the pass interference first. And the pass interference, I definitely agree. That was pass interference. That's the definition, everything about it. But, you know, in these big games, especially in the playoffs and the Super Bowl being the biggest one of all, I think some of these referees do allow more, and they allow things to go, you know, however, you know, they want them to go, because – they don't want the game to be a yellow flag day.
Right, but you gave Denver a touchdown, yeah, when you called the defensive holding on the.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I do. So. It's so hard to say, because if I'm a Carolina fan, I'm sitting here complaining about it all night long. I'm losing sleep because of this. If I'm a Denver fan, I'm like, oh well, you know, it happens. But you know, the thing about this is there's a holding on every play. There's pass interference on a lot of these, you know, plays, and so I don't know. I think it definitely does affect the game, but I mean, it's up to the referees to call it, and I don't know how it's because we could argue about it all day. We really, really could, and I'm sure there were some things that Carolina did. I saw Carolina play a little aggressive in this game, and that's how they have been winning. That's how they won almost all their games but one. So, well, two now. But, you know, saying that, you know, looking at this, you know, it is what it is, and it's hard to sit there and argue about that. But the one thing about that, yes, Sean, the fact that the Kubiak deciding to run the ball, it made me very nervous to think that they were really figuring that they could win, because I thought, you know, Cam Newton has done so great all year, and sure, he's had a bad game. Who's to say this guy don't just all of a sudden pick it up and start going? You know, I was starting to think, man, well, you know, is this just going to be the death of the Broncos? Because, you know, really, Cam Newton has been Superman, and I thought maybe he could do it. Now it didn't end up that way, but it was kind of a surprise to me. I thought they'd be more aggressive than that.
Yeah,
so Randy, in the chat, we have a, you know, Chris Little, he lived in Indiana for a while, so I think he is a little partial to Peyton Manning, but I think it's obvious. I mean, he has a point here where he says that, you know, Cam was going against Denver's number one defense or whatever, and Peyton had a bad game because he has nothing left. And that's true. You could see it during this year, obviously, that he kind of was on his last leg pretty much. But isn't that taken away a little bit from Carolina, too? I mean, are we saying that if Osweiler was in there, it would have been
different? What kind of drives me nuts, and I'll respect to Chris. I respect his opinion, but it's just I think a lot of people are not giving the Carolina defense enough credit this year. I mean, they look at their numbers, and they're okay, but how many times did they completely blow out a team and then you just kind of give up? So then the numbers escalate. I mean, you want to talk about the Carolina defense. Look what they did to the Seattle Seahawks in the first half before Carolina went to bed at halftime. Look what they did to Arizona in that offense. So I don't think it's just because Peyton Manning doesn't have much in the tank as to why they were completely shutting them down.
Won't ever know if it would have made a difference if Osweiler played and that offense would have been a little bit more prolific. We're never going to know that. You know.
And in the end, it doesn't matter. Denver is the Super Bowl champions, but I completely hated their strategy at the end of the game where they kind of took the ball out of Peyton's hands and went, okay, we're just going to run the ball three times and punt it away and give it to the defense. Because listen, there's what, 5-6 minutes to go, and you're just going to go, okay, we're going to run off as much clock as we can when a couple first downs, and then you get start making them call timeouts and stuff. Because listen. Yes, the Denver defense is amazing, but it is still Carolina. Yes, they lost Corey Brown at this point, but there's still Ted Ginn. There's still Devon Funchess. What do those two do more than anything else? They hit the home run. When you least expect it, they hit that home run. Ted Ginn had that 45-yarder where it was like a 15-yard out, and he just made a guy miss, and off to the races he went. I mean, luckily they were able to push him out of bounds, but even with 5 minutes to go and how well your defense is playing, Carolina is known for that one play that breaks 60, 70 yards. And the way you had it set up is you're going, we'll risk the 60 or 70 yard home run ball that would lose us the game and just not allow Peyton Manning to try to win it.
Because then you're asking of cold Peyton Manning to go in, even though, yes, you only had to get a field goal because you'd be down a point or 2 points. Depending on what you want to do there with the 2-point conversion or whatever, but you're asking a Peyton Manning that hasn't thrown the ball in a while to all of a sudden come up with magic for a drive.
Yeah, and just kind of the last thing. I mean, we've touched on a lot of the nerves and stuff, and Gary had brought up, you know, the pass interferences that were and weren't called. And listen, like he said, those happen all the time, and it's whether you call or not, but. The thing that I really noticed in this game that went towards, I think, the nervousness of Carolina and maybe the immaturity of Carolina was how many pre-snap penalties they had in this game that just pushed drives back. I mean, they probably had, what, 5 or 6 false starts?
Yes,
and most of those seemed
they
to happen.
6 pre-snap penalties, yeah.
And most of those happened in the second half when they started to get a little tight and thinking they really needed to make that big play. And it just seemed to kill any momentum they ever even tried to have. And when you're playing a defense like Denver, you can't keep pushing yourself 5 yards back because Denver, they're not going to give you those 5 yards.
Right. And to your point, they were getting nervous because they were scared about what the Denver line was going to do as soon as they snapped the ball, you know. And I think it got in Cam's head, too, because he was tired of getting – he got hit, what, like 10 or 11 times? He got sacked like 6 or 7 times? I mean, that gets to you after a while, just like it did to Brady, just like it, you know, did to anyone else. I mean, that is a factor when you're a quarterback and you drop back and you go, oh, my God, these people are right in my face. You know? Chris brings up that the storyline of the Super Bowl was never Peyton versus the Panthers D. It was Cam versus the Broncos D. Everyone knew that Peyton was not that good anymore. He proved early in the season, even in the postseason, that the defense was going to carry him. That's not taken away from anyone, but to me, it was never about Peyton. It was always about Cam. He had the most to prove.
I don't deny that. I think that's true. I definitely agree with that, because who has been the center of attention? When you were watching ESPN, when you were watching NFL Network, when you were watching just basic local TV, who were they pointing the finger at and talking about how great he was and how he was just this and that? It was always about Cam Newton. I mean, I swore, I mean, all these analysts were wearing jerseys underneath their suits, because they were talking about how great Cam Newton was. And that's not a doubt. He's great. He's the MVP of the league. Duh, he's great. And so I think that is a very solid point, because Peyton Manning was just Peyton Manning. Then no one really was talking about him. It was about focusing on who Cam Newton was and what he was going to do in this game. I don't know. That's a good, fair point to me.
No, actually, I think it's because of that point and that the way the storylines were set up. It was Cam Newton versus the Denver defense, and is this Peyton Manning's last game, that I just get frustrated. I'm like, the Carolina defense is pretty damn good too. I do think Denver.
Yeah, Josh
is
Norman
better,
made Demaryius Thomas's life hell. He didn't do anything. You know,
that's just the point.
Was
I'm
a beast.
The point I'm trying to bring up here is like we break down Cam Newton a lot and just how good Denver's defense was, but it's like watching this game, I always thought Carolina had a chance because Carolina's defense just is that good, and I knew they weren't going to give up any touchdowns. So that's just my point. I totally understand the point where the storyline was going into this. It was just, you got to remember that Denver's defense was not the only good side of the ball in this game.
Right, yeah. And we shouldn't take that away. I think it was a great moment for, you know, Gary and his Cowboys fans. DeMarcus Ware gets the big sack that pretty much kills the game at the end there. Von Miller is obviously the MVP. He got the 2 forced fumbles. He had 2.5 sacks. I mean, he totally deserved that MVP. I think anybody that said there was anybody but Von Miller wasn't watching this game. But
yeah,
you know.
So I mean, before we hit the post game stuff, I'll ask you two, because it blew up my Facebook. What were your guys' thoughts on Cam Newton's second fumble, where it looked like he was going to die for the ball and second guessed it?
I kind of felt like he didn't go for it.
Yeah, you know, okay, here's one thing I think is kind of funny, because you bring that up. My uncle actually texts me, and he says, Cam threw the game. And I'm like, what are you talking about, Cam threw the game? What dummy? And then he said, well, he didn't dive on that ball after he fumbled at the second fumble. You know, I don't know. We don't know. And I'm going to bring this back up again. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to do it. I think Cam was injured. I really do. I think they said, Cam, you can't be injured. Here's the trainers. We're talking to them. We're telling them you're not injured. Get back in the game. Because
he wasn't – in the post game, he sure looked lucid enough to tell everybody that, like, hey, don't keep throwing all this stuff at me. It was this, this, and this, and that's it, and I walk out. Like, you know.
That's not how that went.
Yeah,
they're timing that, and they're saying it's only about 2 minutes he was in there. So tell me.
I know. I watched the 2 minutes, and it was. So I just get into that real quick, because it's going to be the topic. And listen, you don't walk out of the press conference and you dive on that ball. I think both of those things were immature moments, and moments where he doesn't go for it. I think it was more of a frustration thing. Like, he sees the ball, he gets ready to go for it. He sees Von Miller basically reach his giant paw out to go grab it, and got frustrated and went, well, this play's over. I just screwed everything up. As far as the press conference goes, you go back, you go and watch that 2 minutes, and he gets asked 20 questions, but those 20 questions are basically two different questions asked in different ways. It was basically over and over, how are you feeling? Are you frustrated? What was it that frustrated you? Were they the better team? What did they do that frustrated
you? The dumb reporter questions that they feel like they have to ask, so, that they don't need to ask.
So I do not agree with him walking off, but he answered them. I mean, a lot of the, especially as it got on, he got quieter and quieter, and it turned into no or yes. But, I mean, he flat out said, listen, Denver outplayed us. Like, it was all on us. We dropped passes. We allowed sacks. We had errant throws. I mean, I think he answered it the way he was supposed to, but you have a young quarterback out there who just got his heart broken, who just had the most humbling experience of his entire life, and hopefully, you know, he continues to mature. That was something we had talked about. He has matured a lot since his rookie year. Some feel he has a long ways to go, But at that point, it's like, that's the hardest part, I think. It's like something we're never going to be able to experience because right. we're not to there. But it's basically, like Gary or Sean, you lose something very important to you and then have 50 people in your face with microphones asking you how you feel right now. And how are you going to handle that situation? So it's, I don't think walking out was the best move, but I'm not going to villainize him for doing it.
I always think that that's so dumb, the way that they – I know the reporters have to ask these questions. And look, I've been there. You have to ask the dumb questions. But it's just like sometimes it's like, how do you think somebody's feeling? Like, it's just can you not write in your own word? It's just – it's pretty much like cut and dry. I mean, what do you want to be like, oh, I'm happy right now. I just fucking lost the Super Bowl. Like, sorry for the French, but it's just like – I mean –
Explicit button.
No, yeah. That was my exact reaction. I had somebody tell me that. It's like, oh, Cam Newton walked out. What a classless move. I go, oh, what did you want him to come? Come in that crazy suit he showed up in the Super Bowl in, jump around acting like, oh, whatever, we lost the game. I'm still here, and start dabbing for the reporters. Everyone will be talking about how he doesn't care about his team, and it's all about him. It's like, listen, he's devastated that they lost. He's putting a lot of it on
him. I'm certain a lot of it is he's shell-shocked because a lot of it he probably thought, oh, man, we got this. You know, we came this far, you know, all this stuff. We're going to do this. You know, they're super confident, maybe to the point of overconfidence, and that's what they were doing. Like, you know, and let's be honest here. Denver had a chip on their shoulder. That yeah. Denver defense, all they saw, and Von Miller talked about it, was dab this, dab that. Everybody dabbing for all the pictures, like everybody just being all like, oh, we got this. We're going to basically having this thought that they already had it won before they played the game.
Who would have thought that, you know, going around the internet right before the Super Bowl were all those Super Bowl drinking games. Who would have thought that one of those requirements on there was every time you saw a dab, you had to take a shot, that you would be watching the Super Bowl playing this drinking game and you'd be completely wasted off your ass. Because Denver did 90 different dabs in the game trying to show up Cam.
Yeah. Oh, man.
you know, I'm sorry, and I'm going to rewind. I know you guys kind of went off in a different direction, but I'm going to go back to that fumble because I didn't get to finish. But
yeah,
the one thing I want to say is Sean said he's not lucid. You can have a concussion all day long and be lucid enough to have a conversation with somebody. It happens. They do with the trainers all the time. It's not – you don't get a concussion and then all of a sudden go to, I'm Bugs Bunny. That doesn't always happen. So I don't know if it's concussion, the shoulder injury. It may have been immaturity. I could see that as well. But I think he had to weigh the risk of going and diving on the ball and facing Von Miller. Is it smart for me to go for the ball and get knocked out of the rest of this game? Because just trust me, Jake DeLome's not on the sideline waiting for me to go out. So I have to stay in the game. So is it worth it? Probably not. Those quarterbacks have to think about that on a regular basis. We've seen this year, we've covered how many quarterbacks be injured because they dove on a fumble or tried to get to a fumble. We've seen it happen.
Or made
this
a stupid tackle like Andy
Dalton. Or stupid tackle. Exactly. Andy Dalton probably screwed them out of a Super Bowl. So, I mean, things like that happen. I don't know. It could have been immaturity. It could have been. I just think that there's got to be some thought process on why he didn't dive on the ball. It is what it is. Now, when you go into that, you know, post game, exactly what you guys were saying, I think Cam Newton knew he had to keep his mouth shut. Randy, you bring up a good point. That's emotion. That's something he had been working on. Yeah. Cam Newton, every night this past week, over the past 2 weeks, he's probably been dreaming about wearing a Superman shirt, holding the Super Bowl trophy up. And he probably already imagined he was already there. When that dream was broken, he probably had a lot of bad things to say, and he knew he couldn't say them. Those reporters asking those same two questions over and over again just to see what – it was basically not them asking those questions. The questions they were, hey, how mad can you get? Can you please give us a story? Can you please give us a headline? We need to say drop an F-bomb, drop something so we can put this in our magazine or our newspaper. That's what they were doing. That's all the victors always get the spoils of history. They get to write history. No one's going to go back in time and look up Cam Newton 5 years from now and see what he said after the game. No one cares. They're going to be wondering what Von Miller said, what Peyton Manning said. You know, they're going to be going back in time looking at what Tom Brady said last year. So this doesn't matter. I don't know why people are making such a big deal. He just was made the smart decision.
Well, I mean, he has a point. I mean, like Chris brings up the point of this is the first time that Cam's ever lost a championship game. In his life. And Russell Wilson threw the game-losing interception when it was the Patriots winning, and he answered all the questions, and he didn't act like Cam Newton. You know, just I mean, let's be clear now. The other and I think Richard Sherman handled himself pretty well. I think that that wasn't the one where he went off or whatever. It was when they won.
Yep.
But there was other guys like Michael Bennett. I think told one of the reporters, and he's one of the guys that I listened to on that one podcast or whatever I always talk about with you guys off air. He apparently told him that something to the effect of why I effed your wife last night or something like that, because he kept asking him the question about how do you feel or whatever. And it's like, I mean, you totally kind of expect Michael Bennett to answer the question like that, but I just never see Russell Wilson doing it because Russell Wilson's kind of a quiet guy anyway. I think he has a different demeanor than, say, a Cam Newton does. So to kind of compare them is also a bit unfair.
Yeah, and we all have a different emotions. We all we have similar emotions, but we, the way we handle our emotions are completely different. You know, my boiling point is different than yours, Sean. Same with Randy. I can deal with so much crap. All of us have a different amount of it. And yeah. I think these athletes know when they're getting close. And I think Cam was very close to his boiling point, was very smart, and you just said it. Michael Bennett, he didn't really – he went past his boiling point, said a bad thing. These guys have to be smart. Sure, Cam may have not have done what guys did in the past and sit there and talk about their team being on the losing side. But, I mean, I don't know. I just personally feel like it's not a big deal. It is what it is. Let the guy go home, cool off. Interview him when he gets back to Carolina. Talk to him then when he's got a little bit of breathing room.
Yeah, listen, people take losing differently. Just with everything else, everyone has their own personalities. Obviously, Russell Wilson – you know, is able to shrug it off pretty quick. Not saying that he's not devastated by losing the Super Bowl last year, but he's able to shrug it off enough to
and
to
also they've
do
won
his
before.
Job.
They've also won before.
Yeah, absolutely. But some people get really mad. We saw Norman on the sidelines crying and being upset that way. Cam Newton seems like he just gets really quiet. And actually, I mean, I'm never going to get to the point of the Super Bowl, but I have been in many bowling tournaments where I've been really close to winning and falling short, or baseball tournaments back when I was younger. And I'm the same way. It's if I lose something really big or I'm really upset with how I performed and like I feel like I messed it up for the rest of my team, I go off somewhere quiet and just leave me alone for 20 minutes. After that, I'm good. Like I just need that quiet time to just like go through all my thoughts, get it out of my head, cuss at myself for a while or whatever, and then we're good. And so, I mean, you have different people just react to things differently. And obviously, in the day and age of Facebook and Twitter and stuff, we're going to just overreact to what people do. So it's one of those things that you're going to hear about over the next week or two of how he acted. And I just don't see the big deal about it.
Yeah, and I mean, what we go through cannot ever compare to what they're going through as far as, you know, being that close and almost winning. I mean, I think I forgot which game I was watching where they still have the hole. Oh, it's Golden State where they still have the hole in the wall where Dirk freaking kicked something, and they have it there with a picture of Dirk and all that, saying they're reminding him that we still have the hole. And it's just like I was here in Miami when we lost that the Mavericks lost that 2006 championship, and having all of those. Having all those Miami fans in my face afterwards, just I almost like wanted to go off. And the only reason I did is because almost all of it was family, you know. But they were giving me a hard time about it. And I even had my grandpa freaking send me the newspaper the next day with a terrible headline, you know, oh, the Mavericks choked or whatever. And I couldn't, like, I went into a room and I didn't come out until the next day because I – you know, I sat there and I was like, oh, my God, then they're never going to get here again, you know. Yeah. And, you know, with the Cowboys, they've lost so much, I kind of just, it's whatever, you know. But with, like, the Mavericks at that time, I was just kind of like, oh, my God. And eventually they did get back there. And it was just bittersweet because it was against the Heat again and whatever. But, I mean, just it's everybody handles things differently. Because I know if I would have been in a setting aside from family, I probably would have just gone nuts, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it affects everybody. And, you know, you talk about Norman on the sidelines, you know, crying and being upset, and that happens. It's a very emotional. These guys work all year long to get to that point, and to lose means you're stepping back to square one. It means you're back to training camp. It means you're back to trying to do what you did the previous year. And, hey, this NFL, that doesn't always happen. Repeating is not easy. The way the Patriots have done, it's a miracle compared to all these other teams, because we've seen a lot of teams be very good in the next year. They go in the tank. Same with Carolina. Carolina was just in the tank, and we were kind of laughing at them. Now look where they've got. And there's no promise that next year's Carolina team will be this Carolina team. There's no promise that he'll ever get back to the Super
Isn't
Bowl.
Isn't it, like, very common for, like, the next year the Super Bowl winner doesn't even make the playoffs half the time?
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's crazy, but it happens. It's not like basketball where you know that they're getting back there. Football's so different. You know, like you said, they can lose one too many players to free agency because that team's great, and you're done.
Exactly. And the one thing I want to say about that is the fact that, you know, people have said Cam Newton's going to get back there. This is just one of many Super Bowls, in which it could be. I have no idea. Remember back in history, Dan Marino made it to the Super Bowl rookie season. People said the same thing about him. Never won a championship. Just it's sad, but it's the way the NFL works.
Well, I mean, speaking of training camp, speaking of all that, somebody that has to decide whether he wants to do that again, Peyton Manning, of course, was asked about three different times, and I thought this was really – Jim Nance should know better. I know he's supposed to, and I'm sure everybody at freaking CBS was yelling at him on his little earpiece that you have to ask that question. I think it was so rude for him to ask that question right there because Peyton Manning is not going to be Marshawn Lynch and try to take the heat away from everybody else and say I'm retired right there. He's going to announce he's retired some other time. And whether it's tomorrow, whether it's in 2 weeks, whether it's before the season starts next year, I'm glad that he answered the question the way he did. You know, he's just kind of like, I want to kiss my babies and then my wife, and I wanted to go drink some Budweiser's. It's like, Budweiser's getting some free pub here constantly. Well, you mentioned it about three times.
Something doesn't tell me that it was free. Something tells me, because there was one time where he said beer and then paused and said Budweiser. So maybe he's getting a little extra from him. But no, listen, he did it with complete class, and I love the way it happened. I don't mind Nance asking the question because, I mean, like you said, I'm sure CBS was pressuring them because if he says it right there, they have that clip for all time. Like, here's that perfect storyline of he wins the Super Bowl in his last game. It's 200th win of all time, and now he's standing up there on the podium holding the Super Bowl trophy with a confetti coming down saying, I am
retired.
Next
to the last guy that did the whole going out on top and John Elway right there.
Yeah, you know. So obviously they were hoping he would pull the trigger there, but I loved how Peyton Manning said, listen, he gave credit to Tony Dungy for wise advice about letting things soak in a little bit. He made fun of Von Miller saying he was buying all the beer. He gave credit to his team, and he left it at that, and then he wanted to celebrate, which reporters never let him do because it seemed like even an hour after the game, there was pictures coming on Twitter of Peyton Manning in his locker room with 90 reporters surrounding him. So at some point, he will be able to go out and enjoy himself. But it was complete class act by Peyton, for sure.
Is Peyton sponsored by Budweiser? I mean, it's so funny.
He might be. And speaking of sponsorships, I want to go back and watch the ending of this game. But when the game ends and, you know, obviously all the cameras go to Peyton, so you have 90 reporters around him, was the first guy that comes up and, like, shakes his hand, was that the Papa John's guy?
It
was the Papa John's guy that was like one of the first guys that comes out of the reporters and shook his hand before he got to Cam Newton. That's who it looked like. I need to go back and watch it, but yeah. Just speaking of sponsorship.
Speaking of guys, did you notice that Kevin Durant was an accredited photographer for that game, and he was sitting somewhere taking pictures and everything like a freaking photographer? That's wow. Insane. A freaking all-star basketball player being a photographer. Just,
hey, not all basketball players can go and beat on a drum to get into the Super Bowl. Some of them have to do legit work.
You know, and not well, only I that, mean, not everybody's I mean, Michael Jordan, but you know.
Yeah, but he's the one guy that can stand up in his seat and still be taller than everybody else, you know? Yeah. So.
I mean, I thought that was just really humbling. Like, that just seems like a total Kevin Durant thing to do.
Yeah, you know? That's cool, though.
But speaking of something that wasn't humbling at all, Marshawn Lynch goes in there and decides that he wants to sit there and take away from, you know, Denver and Carolina and go, hey, I'm retiring, guys, by the way. Like, okay.
Not
even done this tomorrow?
And not even like that. He throws a picture of his cleats hanging from a wire, like he's hanging up his cleats on Twitter, and that's the way he did it. And so not only does he, like, it's not like he goes out and does a press conference real quick just to do it so then everyone knows.
I mean,
now
it does go along with Marshawn Lynch but not talking, I guess.
Well, I mean, and that was the thing I saw. Oh, what a class move. He's going out there without saying a word, just like Marshawn. Shut up. It was him doing it this way, so it will slowly leak out. So it's not, oh, here at the halftime, Marshawn Lynch just reported he's retiring. It was, not much is said, not much is said. So now, as everyone's talking about the Super Bowl, it's, oh, hey, did you see that tweet by Marshawn Lynch? Do you think that's what he's doing? Is he retiring? Let's talk about that. Well, what about the Super Bowl? I don't care about that. Look at this tweet. It's like, just come on. Wait a couple days. Obviously, Peyton Manning has the biggest stage to do it and was kind enough not to. You don't need to throw out a tweet during the Super Bowl, even if you've made up your mind. Give it 3 or 4 days. Give those guys the spotlight that they earned. It was just, I mean, especially, again, Pacific Northwest, so I'm surrounded by Seahawks fans, and my Facebook is just filled with Cam Newton hate. And me having to post on there teasing them about different things or trying to defend Cam Newton. I'm not even a Cam Newton fan, but I'm becoming one because of the way the season has gone. But you get all this Cam Newton hate, and then right after it is all of the love that they're showing from Marshawn Lynch about how much of a class act he is. And I couldn't be further from the truth for me. I hated what he did on the Super Bowl where – you just, I'm just here not to get fined. No, you're here to make an ass of yourself. So then 9 different sponsorships will come your way.
Well, you know what? That's smart.
It worked, but it's not classful. It's not something I look at and go, oh, that is what I'm going to show my children as a great role model. Stop it.
That's what I'm going to show my children as a great marketing genius.
Yes.
No, I mean, it's like, you know, let's be honest. If this was a female, it'd be, you know, a sex sells thing. You know, with him, it's bad behavior sells. But, you know, I just think it's so funny. A guy that pretends like he doesn't want to talk sure does want all the attention on him. And yep. I think this is bad. I think it's ridiculous. And this is just, it is selfish. Everybody's talking about Cam Newton being selfish. There's a selfish guy right there. And I hope he retires. He has nothing else to offer.
Well, that's kind of mean.
He doesn't. Look, did you see his season? And then not only that, I mean, the guy's run down. If anybody picks him up, it's going to be Cleveland, and then they're going to be embarrassed and cut him.
Yeah, well, you know, knowing Cleveland, they'll just pay him the whole time because they don't give a crap. I mean, look, they paid Dwayne Bowe to just stand there. So, you know, I just, you know, Chris makes a good point. He's saying that apparently – if you're an active NFL player, you cannot endorse alcoholic products. So that might mean that it was Peyton kind of hinting he was retiring without saying it. But, you know, because if he retires, the league's not going to, you know, fine him or anything for that.
I just think it's funny because Peyton Manning, in several conclusions of different games I've seen in the past, he's always throwing out beer sponsors, and I think one week I believe it was Bud Light or something like that.
And still this game, the same company.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying he's throwing out different names of beers, and you know, it's just kind of funny to me that he's doing that because you know, I had never known him to do that.
Well, there you go. Did you guys see the Eli Manning when that touchdown goes in? The total, like, no-sell he does.
The memes that are already out. I love the internet. So, like, obviously the internet just makes my head hurt, I mean, because of things. But, oh, my God. Their ability to come up with 9 million memes, 3 seconds. after something happens. Like my favorite is like the face you have when you realize you don't have as many or you don't have more Super Bowl championships as your brother, and just it was great. It was funny.
I thought it was silly because he went on record saying that he wanted his brother to win and all that kind of stuff, and it's kind of like your dad's sitting there all excited or whatever, and you're kind of like,
do you really believe that though, Sean? Do you really?
No,
believe...
I mean this is kind of like he's cutting a promo. You know, we all know this.
Yeah, so. I mean he's not really believing that. So,
well, you know what it is, because I'm sure that Peyton has always been Archie's favorite a little bit, and if Eli had more championships, then he would be looked more fondly upon. But now that they're tied, I guess Peyton would kind of resume the status again. I don't know.
Well, because I mean, in my personal opinion, Peyton Manning, first ballot Hall of Famer. Eli Manning, not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
So, I think if he keeps doing what he did this year, whether he wins a championship or not, he's definitely going in. But yeah, I agree with you. He's not first ballot. Unless he wins another championship, then he is. You guys have a thought?
Because no,
this would transition
right
into
us
talking about.
Yeah, I totally agree there. I think Peyton's first ballot. I think Eli will make it. Decent career with two Super Bowl championships. So I think he makes it, but he won't be first ballot.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of ballots, the Hall of Fame ballots were given out. And, of course, we knew Brett Favre was getting in. That was like a no-duh. Kenny Stabler finally in as, you know, should have been in way long ago. But now he's in, even though sadly he's passed on. But Orlando Pace gets in. Both Marvin Harrison and Tony Dungy the same year. That's kind of crazy. The coach and player. I think that's happened before, but I don't have it offhand on me. I think there was one other player that I cannot think about right now. Oh, Kevin Green. You know, as you said, Gary, WCW is finally getting into the NFL Hall of Fame.
I'm so happy.
Just the people that are not wrestling fans that listen to that were like, what the hell is he talking about?
Hey, don't forget, he was in the WWE. He was a bodyguard for Lawrence Taylor at WrestleMania 11.
Oh, that's true. Right. He was.
That is true.
But, I mean, I think all deserving. I think people have kind of forgotten what Kevin Green did because it's been a while, but. Everybody else, I don't think you can. I would have never thought. A lot of people were saying Marvin Harrison wouldn't get in first ballot, whatever, you know. And amazing, that's it. He's there.
Yeah, you know what? I'm happy for him. I really, really am, and I think that's great that he has that opportunity to be, you know, put in. But I can still think of other receivers that probably could don that jacket before he does, and one of them is definitely Drew Pearson. But you know, we'll find out. That'll never probably happen. But. I'm serious. I mean, a guy that won Super Bowls, a guy that, you know, I don't know. That's my argument.
No, I agree with you. Look, you know, as Cowboys fans, we can argue this all day.
Well, I'm just mad because Lynn Swann's in and he didn't do as much as Drew. But anyway, my point being, though, is, you know, the one thing I want to say is great class, a lot of great, you know, Hall of Famers here. Each one, you could point out different parts of their career, why they deserve it. And definitely Kevin Green, you mentioned, you know, people may not know or remember why. But the one thing is look at pictures of Kevin Green. You'll see those beautiful blonde locks and you'll understand why he's put in.
I mean, Chris brings up T.O. and I think I agree with you with that. You know, Gary always has to, you know, make us think about his choices in life. But, you know, Chris brings up the point of T.O., and I think the reason why, you know, I would say Harrison over T.O. because Harrison won the championship. But, you know.
Yeah, I think that just more shows, I mean, sure, the numbers may lean more T.O., but Marvin Harrison had a great career, and he did it with class. So I think a lot of times if you want to be first ballot, that's kind of where they lean towards is they look at your character too. T.O. is going to make the Hall of Fame. I mean, he had a great career, but I think that, you know, the character of Marvin Harrison put him over the top compared to somebody like T.O.
And let's be honest. I mean, I don't know about you, Randy, but if I had T.O. up there in that jacket and he's going to give a speech, wouldn't you be a little bit nervous? If I'm the NFL, I'm terrified.
If I'm the NFL, you know what I'm terrified about? Randy Moss and T.O. getting in the same Hall of Fame class.
Yeah.
Could you imagine two guys that just Talk about the whole show will be about them.
Yeah, they'll have to bring out the applause sign for sure. But yeah, no, it is kind of funny to say that, but these kind of guys that, you know, do kind of have a real emotional backgrounds. We've seen the, you know, different situations we've seen T.O. being in. I think, statistics are behind him. He does deserve to want to be in the Hall of Fame, but I think the NFL may want to wait till he's a little bit older and kind of get some of the craziness behind him.
Certainly. Chris brings up the, hilarious, that's my quarterback.
Oh, God.
I can watch that every time and laugh. But,
it's ridiculous.
I mean, he is talking about, the guy that's still there. Thank you for the transition again there, Chris. Talking about hopefully a quarterback that we do not see anywhere. We have to talk about it. Hopefully this is the last time that we have to talk about this for a while. So the last time we were with you on the Johnny Manziel saga, they had decided that as Randy probably tries to go find the mute button and go somewhere else at this moment.
Yeah, I just hit my head against the wall.
But, we talked about how they had closed the case. Now all of a sudden we find out about her getting a restraining order from Manziel. And now Dallas has decided to open a case against Johnny Manziel for domestic violence. Do we think anything is going to come of this? Even though I was a bit taken back by the fact that his dad came out and said, I do not think my son will live till 24 unless he basically takes care of this problem or whatever it is. Just, yeah. His dad had no qualms about not defending his son there.
Yeah, this definitely is looking more and more like a case that you see with young celebrities, especially movie stars and stuff, where they hit the fame before they mature and it gets to their head and then it gets worse and worse and worse. And then when it gets too far gone and everyone tries to help them out, they're so defiant and think they're bigger and better than everything that they don't see the problem yet. And it's getting past the point of how we just are getting sick and tired of Johnny Manziel to the point of you really do have to be concerned for his well-being. I mean, because obviously he doesn't, and not because it's just one of those things where he just doesn't see it. And it's kind of sad, and one of those things where you have to decide whether, how much responsibility falls on him, because there are conditions for this kind of stuff. He came up with a high upbringing, he got away with a lot of stuff. So you can put that on the parents, but the parents are doing, from the sounds of it, from what they're saying, they're doing their best to try to get him back into rehab. From that report, it looked like he went into rehab and checked himself out that same day because it wasn't like he was forced to be there. So I kind of agree with his dad where, I mean, unless he goes and finds true help and sees, what is really going on and starts to really do, that self-reflection and fixing himself, he might not see it to 24. This is went from a, I don't want him in the NFL to I'm worried about him making it another year.
You know, Randy, you bring up a good point on that, and it's clear as day to me. I'm surprised no one else is picking up on this, but it's clear he's got a case of influenza. And
I saw Chris post that too, that's exactly it.
Yeah, go to Mexico. That's the cure. So Manziel, head down to Mexico City and stay there for a while. Maybe visit a jail and then come back home.
See if that works. What do you say to the people, and I still have people, I had not just Fonty, but other people message me and say, how could you, there's apparently more stories that are saying RG3 is expected to be signed by Dallas, and I sit there and say a million times, I'd much rather take an injury-prone RG3 that I know may have been humbled by what happened to him, and if he decides that, hey, I'm just going to be a pocket passer, I still have an arm that I can throw, and not have the head case and the circus that is Johnny Manziel being constantly taking away things from the team. Even though he's the backup, he's going to get talked about more than Romo, and Romo's the one playing the damn quarterback position. I mean, just – I hope that he's okay, and I hope as a human that he is able to rehabilitate himself, and if he comes back in the league and does okay, then good for him. But this is not a Greg Hardy situation. I do not think that it's a good idea for anybody on the Cowboys staff to go, let's go sign Johnny Manziel, because it's not going to end well at all. It's just going to be more problems and a bigger circus, because this is where he grew up and all this crap. And, you know, just he's had – and I do put this on – he needed to hit – I'm not saying that this – it's sad to say like this kind of he needed it, but he needed a reality check. That life is not just handed to you, and when you have setbacks like what you have with the Cleveland Browns and you are still given opportunities, you go out there and defy what they ask you not to do. You know, just – if you have a problem, you need to tell somebody and you need to say, look, I can't do – I got to go out and party, or at least be honest and say I went out and party. It's just mm-hmm. You lied to them. You did all this stuff they asked you not to do, and then you want them to not drop you in March. And then you go to Dallas Maverick games, and you do this on purpose to be seen in Dallas so everybody can talk about you, so people can sit there and want you to be signed by the Cowboys and all this stuff, and have people – defending you like it was some crime against humanity that Johnny Manziel didn't get to play enough football for Cleveland. Just, I don't know. Does anybody think that Cleveland was being harsh by not letting him go out there and party and wanting him to be a saint, basically?
No.
That's what I don't know. I just, like, everybody else gets their whole deal was everybody else on the team gets to party, but Johnny Manziel can't. What's wrong with that?
Because Johnny takes it too far, I think is the point. It's listen, you can get away, you can go out and have fun until you go too far, and now you start getting privileges taken away.
Yeah,
you can go out and go to the bar, and then come home until you drink too much and get caught for DUI, and then you take your driving part away. It's the same thing. It's like you can do things until you go to excess with it, and then we got to start taking your privileges away.
Yeah, you know, it's just a sad story. This whole thing is, and we've talked about it several times on this podcast, and we've talked about it, you know, even off air. You know, the things are just not going the way that we kind of thought it could go. If you would have paid any attention to his A&M days, then you would think maybe this could happen, but a lot of people would say, no, he's going to kind of grow up. We think he's going to do these things that are, you know, life-changing, you know, to help him grow as a person. He's more, you know, adult. And in fact, you know, there was a point in Cleveland when we thought maybe he has cleaned his act up, and that was all a charade. And you know, it's a sad thing. You know, we've seen this happen before. You know, remember there was a guy named Ryan Leaf who was in the league and, you know, drafted the same year that Peyton Manning. That was the big debate. Who's the better quarterback? You know, I think we all learned our lesson on that, didn't we? And the same with Johnny Manziel. People thought he was going to be the next big thing and, you know, just didn't turn out that way. And hopefully he can fix himself, because right now it's not looking good.
I just – has anything come out about the fact whether he was drinking or not during that whole – episode?
The girlfriend says that she thought he was on something, but it wasn't alcohol. Is what she is saying.
Yeah. It's gonna be worse. Okay.
I try to avoid the story as much as possible.
Because, you know, alcohol was supposedly involved when they had the fight in the car and all this stuff. So, I mean, obviously it's not just something that it only happens at parties. You know, just if it's affecting your domestic life, there's a bigger issue happening there usually. And, you know, just saying from experience of having to have live with somebody, grown up with someone that could functionally do everything they needed to do, but sometimes when they drank a little bit too much, you could tell that not everything was right in the world when they were around you inebriated, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was obvious because the people that you love get taken out on the most, right? So, I don't know. Seems like a similar type of situation. But let's hope that for his sake, things get better. Look, this is the last time I'm going to talk about this unless it happens, because I'm tired of talking about it too, even though I kind of want to see it happen for his career and because he's went to Baylor and everything. But now that it's not some kind of competition between two guys, if the reports do happen, Gary, and the Cowboys sign RG3, let's say they don't pay him a lot of money, and he's just there as a backup, you can still draft somebody. Let's say he actually learns from the mistakes that he made. Is it a good pick? I mean, this is a lot of ifs that I'm throwing out here, but is it a good pickup for the Cowboys at all?
The key thing here is not a lot of money, a lot of conditions to the contract, and an understanding with him and ownership, of course, the head coach is most importantly, that he is under their leadership. He is not the leader. He is the follower. And, he needs to understand that. I think that's where he kind of misconstrued himself when it came to, his former coaches and situations, because he felt like he knew better, which is not the case. And that's what put him into this situation. And, of course, following his own advice got him put in injury situations. And he could have really been in some dire situations at that point with his career. But yes, I think the biggest thing here is I think it would be a fine choice for Dallas to do. They don't have any other really quality backups. This would give a guy an opportunity. It would give Dallas an opportunity to get a really athletic guy, a guy that, has some football intelligence behind center. Of course, that would be behind Tony Romo. So it's not like he's starting day one. This guy may never play a down next season. But it gives you some insurance, which is always great. And if you can get him, really into that mindset of, hey, I'm here to play for you guys. I'm not playing just for myself. I think it's a good pickup. I really do. Besides that, I mean, that's my biggest condition. He has to have a condition in his contract saying, if I screw up and I start pretending like I'm the head coach, they can cut me tomorrow and they owe me nothing.
I mean, as we've seen with Greg Hardy, we've seen with T.O., we've seen with other players, Dion, other players. The Cowboys have a history of being able to take guys that are seen as malcontents or problems, and they make them conform to the system of whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Randy, I mean, what do you think about it?
Guys, I'm not a fan of RG3, so trying to predict how well he will do in Dallas is difficult. I'm biased.
I mean, look, anybody said, Ezekiel Elliott came out and said he hopes Dallas drafts him. I mean, yeah, of course you're going to want to run behind the offensive line, whatever. And look, I'm not going to complain if Ezekiel Elliott wants to come to Dallas. The dude's a hell of a running back. But, I mean, it's the same thing with DeMarco Murray coming back and all that. You have to, like Gary said, it's not about you. It's about the team. And remember that everybody should be wanting to win whether you play or whether you don't play.
Yeah, and you made a great point throughout, the contracts and guys that have been on this team, and Hardy's a great representation of that, because last year Dallas could have cut him any time they wanted to and there would be no repercussions. I think the same have to go for RG3 if they were to make a call like that.
All right. I mean, anything else that you guys, and Chris, for the record, thinks it's a great fit, but, he's a Cowboys fan as well. Anything else you guys want to touch on about the Super Bowl, about the season, anything, now that this whole season is officially has a cap on it, what do you think is the thing that stands out to you most about this 2015 NFL season this year?
My Jets didn't embarrass themselves.
Yeah?
That's what I got. That was all I got the whole season. No, I really think, I mean, this season really showed what is so great about the NFL. I mean, compared to other sports, it's you still have your really good teams that have good foundations that do pretty well. And but it has such variety in it that teams that have struggled over the last few years are still going to make runs at it. So it's the most unpredictable thing in sports is trying to figure out in preseason who's going to win each division, because there's always going to be those surprises, both good and bad. And who would have ever thought that Cam Newton was going to have the year he did after losing Kelvin Benjamin, where it would go from, yeah, Cam Newton's okay, he's a little flashy, but whatever, to either you absolutely love the dude or you think he's the devil. I mean that's a sign of success, I think, if you're that polarizing now. So, yeah, just another one of those really fun years.
And you look at it, too, how much, you know, your record doesn't matter, it seems like, because the two top winning teams in the league – they both go down. I mean, obviously Carolina was had a higher winning, you know, they had more wins than the Cardinals. They took them down, but then, you know, here come the Broncos, and they took down the big team in the NFL. Very much, you know, like the Giants did to the Patriots those years ago when they were going in undefeated and all that. So, and we can't ever assume that because you're having the most awesome year or whatever, you're always going to win the big one at the end.
You know, the biggest thing that, you know, I think of in this season was, man, is Robert Cooper going to maybe eat crow this year? And it didn't end up happening, but the entire season I thought it would. My comments about Kelvin Benjamin being out, I just joked around. That ended up being bad news for me because it made me look like an idiot. Just, you know, giving a hard time to somebody who's a Panthers fan. But, you know, it's, you know, once again, as a turnaround, it's exactly kind of what Randy said. It's the whole entire season as a whole, seeing these journeys these teams are taking and seeing the fact that the teams that we really did not have a lot of credit going to, you know, when we were talking in the preseason, ended up being just the teams that, you know, you had to watch out for the entire year. And the teams we thought were going to do well, Atlanta being one of them, ended up not being as great as they were advertised. And so that's the fun part. I love seeing all these young players be successful. You know, Devontae Freeman being one of those guys, you get a chance to see, you know, even, you know, Jameis Winston, watching him play this year, I just really was not high on him. And he actually did a lot better than I ever expected. I didn't think that he was going to be able to reach that level. So, I mean, it's interesting. It's great to see that, you know, the NFL's got some young stars out there that are going to be kind of evolving over time. And, you know, it's just – it's fun, and it's been a pretty good year.
Yeah, it has. And you'll have to wonder if, you know, what comes in that next season. I mean, Peyton Manning will find out at some point here. Chris made a wonderful comment about this season proved that no one still knows what constitutes a catch.
Yes, Chris. Chris got it figured out.
Yep.
You have won the internet for today, Chris. yeah, that's very true. And, you know, will Cam Newton learn from this big setback? A lot of times we see teams, they lose like this, the next year they're here and they're winning it, you know, or they're really close to this again. Will we see the happy-go-lucky Cam next year, or will he be a bit more mature and a bit more reserved? You know, more like, I'm not celebrating until we get there, you know?
I'm a little bit mad at Cam Newton right now, and it's not because he lost the game, not because of the great year he had. I'm a little bit mad because I think he ruined the ending of Batman versus Superman.
You were going to go see that movie?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, Superman lost the Super Bowl. He can't beat Batman then, right?
No, he really shouldn't anyway. Superman's boring as a character, but
you're talking about the wrong movie. There are Krang in the new Turtles movie.
Ooh, I can't wait. and
freaking Stephen Amell is I can't remember the hockey mask guy's character name.
Cage.
Cage? Is that
what's his
Casey
name?
Jones.
Casey Jones. Yes.
Come on, guys. Come on. And Casey. Don't forget Sheamus is in it. I forget if he's Rocksteady or Bebop.
He's Bebop.
Bebop.
It's going to be glorious.
Yeah. I can't wait till we hear that Irish accent in there. That's Bebop. Yeah.
And we know Chris is excited about the Jungle Book movie, so.
Yeah. I can't wait till he tells me all about that. But anyway, I mean, hey, Deadpool's coming out in a couple of days.
Valentine's Day, baby.
Yeah. Or, well, is that what you're doing on Valentine's Day?
Shh. Just keeping that a secret. Yes.
Oh. Well, that's a pretty awesome Valentine's Day. There you go. Anyway, before we reveal everybody's Valentine's Day gifts here, let's get off of this podcast. Thank you for listening to our Super Bowl postgame extravaganza. We're going to take Thursday off, and we're going to be back on Monday already talking about the draft. And apparently the Keanu trailer is the best trailer of all. So either way, we'll be back. I don't know what division we're doing, but we're going to do division breakdowns and let very much how we did the division breakdowns of the kind of doing division predictions. We're going to do, let them tell us what they think the draft needs are and all that kind of stuff. Who is on the horizon that they could maybe see in the draft or anything like that. Let them kind of speak for their teams, and then we'll kind of compare and contrast. I'll have to see who we get first, and then we'll figure it out from division that way. But should be fun to kind of go through each week, at least once a week, with each division and each team. And we'll also have a Thursday show where we'll be talking about the news and all that stuff. So we'll have plenty of stuff for you here, maybe even a revamp of the podcast itself, if this income tax money ever gets to me here. but it seems like we wait an eternity for that to come in when you really need it. So thank you everybody for listening. Subscribe, rate and review on iTunes and Stitcher and all those other places. Of course, you can subscribe to the entire W2M network where you can get the rest of our great podcasts, including wonderful partner podcasts like Randy's Backlog Busting Project, where he and Wes review video games of the previous release variety. What did you guys do this week?
Yeah, our last episode, we talked about Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, and kind of talk about the good and the bad and what it's kind of not aged the best, I guess. You can say I played a wonderful game called Freedom Planet. Not a very old game, but has that old school kind of feel. It's a love letter to the Sega Genesis platformers, and I absolutely loved it. And Wes played the crazy game of Catherine. And just a kind of reminder, if you guys are interested, March 3rd and 4th, we are doing a 24-hour live stream. More information on backlogbusting.com or check our Facebook page, where we're trying to raise as much money as we can for the Extra Life Foundation. So we're getting all geared up for that. I have all new tech coming in next week as we start getting all of that side figured out.
All right. I mean, I would recommend that you go check out the wrestling podcast. So we had an error, as you may have noticed when you try to listen to this podcast. That one that came out on Thursday, this studio that we used right here decided to have an update and totally screw with all of my microphone things, and I picked the wrong one, and it made Gary and Randy have this terrible popping sound when they were talking, which I didn't notice until after I was hearing it back. So I apologize for that, but we've seemed to figure it out, and hopefully everything was good on this show. And as I said, we'll be back this coming Monday, and when we'll let you know the details with the division that we're doing first and who's going to be up there talking about it and everything along with us. So until then, hope everybody had a good Super Bowl party, didn't drink too much, and got home safely. And we'll see you again on Monday. What is it, February 15th, I think? Yes, 15th. Or it would be more like Tuesday the 16th. All right. Later.
Listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.